Why is prioritizing and understanding women's sexuality important?
Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler.
We're brothers.
We're therapists.
And we know recovery.
Bring your stories, your questions, your successes with real recovery.
Hey, Tyler, you ready to have some hard conversations?
Let's do it.
Let the Therapy Brothers podcast begin.
Brandon, what is going on, man? How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Had a good weekend. We got some snow hitting the mountains right now, so my kids are all excited about skiing here, so we just need to keep the snow coming.
Just keep it coming, right? Yeah. I was just going to say, Brandon, like, you just got back from that trip to Cambodia, and something did shift in you a little bit. You don't seem quite as uptight. You don't seem quite as ready to like pick a fight with everybody. Like,
you think I'm so combative.
You love it. You love a good debate. So I've noticed that you seem just kind of like just more like Zen, man. I hope that's true.
Yeah. I guess you realize a lot of things aren't that big a deal, you know, when you get a little perspective check in your life. So
yeah, that's good. Yeah. Well, today we actually have an awesome kind of topic and an awesome guest for today. This isn't your typical sort of like caller kind of person. This is actually another expert. We have Bonnie Young with us. Bonnie is a licensed marriage and family therapist. She's a frequent presenter and podcast guest, a published author of several academic articles and essays on religion and mental health. She's the founder of Azure Counseling, an online mental health clinic focused on treating clients with anxiety, religious OCD and scrupulosity, and sexual disorders. She holds a bachelor's degree in history with an emphasis on Mormon women's history and a master's degree in marriage and family therapy, both from Brigham Young University. Born and raised in the Seattle area, she currently lives in Logan, Utah. That's my stomping grounds, where she's completing her doctoral studies at Utah State University in marriage and family therapy. And her dissertation right now is exploring the questions about women's experience with power dynamics in Latter-day Saint marriages. So Bonnie, welcome.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Can I start by just asking you the question that we asked? Is why is it important to prioritize women's sexuality and understand it better?
Man, I could talk about this for saying there's so many angles to answer this question but I think at a foundational level, prioritizing understand women's experiences is really important because it won't happen if you're not purposeful about it. And mm-hmm. What I mean by that is we live in a world where I would say the male gaze dominates, meaning that when it comes to sex, men's sexuality is considered the norm. Mm-hmm. Like when people think about like even how sex works, right? When you're taught in health class, when sex is taught, penetration is taught, mm-hmm. right? Which really points to male sexuality being the norm, male sexuality setting the standard for what men and women both expect in sex. Now, the example of penetration I gave is an oversimplification of what I believe sex encompasses, and we'll definitely get to that. But I think just at a foundational level, being able to prioritize a woman's experience is necessary because if not, the male experience will be accepted by men and women as the norm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. If I can, like, I actually really like your example of penetration because, you know, we're kind of taught sex is when the penis goes in the vagina, right? Like, and that penetration is sex. And, you know, I guess, and tell me if I'm wrong here, the reason why that's such a male perspective is many women don't orgasm or have sexual pleasure with just penetration. And so when we talk about that as sex, that's a very male view of what sexuality is, right? That's kind of what you're saying, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh.
It seems that part of where you're headed here is, and I'm just sitting here listening to your explanation, it kind of sets the landscape for there to be a lot of misunderstanding, miscommunication, judgment, frustration, if the only thing being taught is this one kind of model of sexuality, which, by the way, isn't even a full model of sexuality, even for males, I don't think.
Exactly.
But then all this expectation comes into a relationship, but there's never this other side that gets talked about. And so it's this kind of like silent lead weight that's almost hanging on in the relationship that never actually gets addressed. And then it becomes laced with judgment and shame, almost makes it taboo to even want to mention this the way that we're even talking about it today.
Yeah, absolutely. I've just seen so much pain come from a lack of education about how women work, and not just pain for women, as if, you know, women are the only ones being harmed by this, but also men, right? It has been very, very rare that in my therapeutic work, I've worked with a man who doesn't just love pleasing and pleasuring his wife, right? I think that there's inherent goodness and challenges in both female and male sexuality. And I think one of the inherent beauties in male sexuality is the generosity and the just this drive to give and to serve. And I think that can be kind of misdirected when we don't really know how to do that. And when a woman doesn't feel like she has the knowledge or the permission to help him in that.
I want to come back to what you're saying, Bonnie, because I think it's really, really cool what you said and really important. But it is pretty crazy. Like it's pretty asinine to say something like, hey, sex is for the man, and you better provide for his needs. But it's like, as I say something like that, really in the way I've been kind of taught, and it's not that crazy, because it's been embedded in us that sex is a male thing. Sex is for his pleasure, and if she orgasms or whatever, we work toward that, great. But like, his needs need to get met first and foremost, which this whole belief that it's such a male thing, that's what you're both saying, is it leads to what's wrong with you as a woman if you're a sexual being? What's wrong with you if you explore things or want sex or whatever? I haven't been able to organize a sex addiction group for women because it's too shameful.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough women will come forward and say, I have this, I deal with this, because they don't want to own that that's a man's thing. Like, I'm embarrassed that I even have this, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's really sad and not the case. Like, believe it or not, women are just as sexual as men, right?
Yeah. But I think that because in general, women's sexuality presents, acts differently than men's, mm-hmm. it's kind of seen as like, it's kind of like sexuality light. Right? I think that the world that we live in assumes that healthy, normal sexuality looks like how it appears in men, which is, having more, and this isn't, again, these are oversimplifications, and
sure.
There's people who definitely don't fit in these boxes, but that sex is spontaneous, that arousal should happen quickly, that orgasm should always happen, that, right, that there's this sequence, and that sex is happening frequently, right? And so for so many women who don't fit that model, which was actually developed with, so as a little aside, sexuality research is still definitely an emerging field, but this model of sexuality that was developed in the 70s by some researchers named Masters and Johnson, they they did research on the sexual response, but they only did it with men. So like, even in the beginning, right? Like this research about how sex works and how people respond sexually was only done with men. And in more recent years, there's been a lot of work done with, okay, well, what's a model that that represents women's experiences a little bit more wholly? And in those models, sexuality isn't talked about as, or like this, you know, sexual drive isn't talked about as this spontaneous, quick thing for most women. Again, gross oversimplification, sex is a little bit more responsive, that there's responsive desire, that there's a lot of choice in desire. And I think because that's not, you know, that's not, we don't talk about that collectively as normal, right? That's normally seen as like, oh, actually, there must be something wrong with her if she's not desiring sex. And then, right, so then what you mentioned, Brandon, about, you know, women having shame, right? There's shame about being sexual at all, but then there's shame that, man, there must be something wrong with me that I'm not desiring this, like my
both husband. Either way,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a loaded situation that leads to more disconnection in the area of life where it could be one of the best places to connect, or a really vital place for connection. You know, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this. I'm just thinking as you're talking, like, if we were to take sex out of the equation for a second, as it relates to sexuality in a, say, a couple relationship, what are the actual emotional processes and needs that a woman is feeling and experiencing versus what a man is feeling and experiencing? And how did we get our wires so crossed that it seems that both sides of those emotional needs, and I hesitate to even use the word needs, maybe you speak to that too, but like the emotional process never actually is accomplished for a lot of couples when that's what it was designed to be for.
Yeah. Ooh, I love what you just said. That was just, because I feel like it hit, like, so in all my therapeutic work, and then also just in my own like philosophical life, like it really matters to me the purpose. Like, why are we having this conversation at all? Why is this important? Is it because sex is a need in that we have this itch that needs to be scratched, right? I would say that's a immature understanding of what sex can be. And I think Tyler kind of touching on like, what are the emotional needs for women and for men that sex can provide, and that in its most optimal expression does provide. I think it's about this deep belonging and being known and celebration. And I think that when we are not acting with integrity around our sexuality, or even embracing the gifts that are naturally ours as a result of being a man or a woman, I think that, yeah, we can kind of bring a fragmented self to that experience, which restricts the ability to meet those, and I would call those needs, this need of being known, this need of being desired, this need of being deeply, soulfully connected with another person. Those needs do exist, and I think do matter. Mm-hmm. I think we can meet those needs in a lot of different ways. I think sex is one of the most beautiful expressions of how to do that. But one challenge I see is when that's not understood, or when sex is seen as only a physical or only an emotional or only a spiritual way to connect, I think by virtue of it not being treated as a multidimensional experience, it can't become that, or it can't be a truly honest experience because of that.
Mm-hmm. Say more, Bonnie, about it being a multidimensional experience, because I think that's really important. And I think for a lot of guys, they just don't get it. They're like, oh yeah, multidimensional. Mm-hmm. What do you even mean?
Yeah. Like, this is really simple, actually.
Well, let me paint a picture, Bonnie, and then you can answer Brandon's questions. I think it goes along with this. Like, I think Brandon and I probably both run into this. Maybe you do with your own practice all the time. Couple comes into the office. We're not meeting each other's needs. He says, we need to have sex more. And she's like, I need to feel connected before we can have sex. And then it turns into this complete standoff.
Yeah.
What he's really wanting is he's wanting to be all that stuff. I love the way you just described it, deeply understood, but he also wants to provide for her.
Yeah.
So sex isn't really good for him unless she's fully engaged. And she's saying, I can't really fully engage if I'm being told this is a duty and this is a need.
I'm feeling forced.
Like somehow she has to have the freedom to understand her own processes and not have the judgment coming from him in order for him to get what he wants, in order for her to be open to that experience in a way that she can also feel safe and understood and fully known.
Yeah.
So anyway, maybe that picture to go along with Brandon's question.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I got a little bit lost. I was like loving this. So what's the question again?
Well, just to speak more about it being a multidimensional experience, and I think that's true for both men and women. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times men don't understand that, you know, that they think mm-hmm. of penetration, they think of orgasm, they think of, you know, let's get the result, let's make this happen.
Linear.
Linear, boom, where, you know, like, what does it mean, a multidimensional experience?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that... I have a million thoughts. Hold on. My brain is okay. So little warning for the listeners, I'm pregnant. So this is like pregnancy brain also mixed with just like me being really excited to talk about all these things. And so I'm just going to like take a little note.
That's fine.
But so let me talk about a study that was done that I love talking about with anyone who's interested in listening. On optimal sexual experiences. And as an aside, this study was done with, I think, people in the realm of sex therapy. So this study was done with people who are really comfortable talking about sexuality. And also, sex therapists tend to be a little bit more free with their sexuality. These were not religious folks. So just knowing who the population of this study was, I think matters, who the sample was. So they asked this group, I think it was 40-ish clinicians, sex therapists, tell me about your optimal sexual experiences, like the best sexual experiences that you've had. And what I love about what they found is, they found, so it was qualitative research. So they were doing interviews. People were giving really rich descriptions of these experiences. And then afterwards, the research team goes through and tries to find the themes. What are the things that people are saying over and over again? And the themes that emerged, I think there were about 8 or so. And I think orgasm, like in answering the question, what was my optimal sexual experience, or what have been my optimal sexual experiences? Orgasm, I think, was at like number 8, or maybe it was number 9. What was talked about by these people who had extensive sexual histories and probably very, you know, lots of exploration with their sexuality was, what they talked about over and over again was the sense of connection, was the sense of creativity, expansiveness, mm-hmm. like this feeling of belonging, this feeling of, and I mean, this might feel a little bit woo-woo to some of the listeners, and I can empathize with that, but like, stay with me here. Like this feeling of being so deeply connected with another person that like the boundary between you and them doesn't exist. That's mm-hmm. what they talked about as like being the best, like the optimal expression of their sexuality. Now, if I am listening to this and I'm like, all right, with my kids all day, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that just sounds like so much work. Yeah. You know, I think that it can be a little bit counterproductive to try to have like this amazing experience every single time. I think sometimes you fit in a quickie to tell your spouse that I love you and I see you and I want to connect with you, and it can be good enough. I think we have to be okay sometimes with good enough sex. But I think it also matters. What we're aiming to create in our sexual relationship also really matters. And I think if we're aiming to try to create a place of celebration, of safety, of belonging, of acceptance, of fun and play. I think that really matters versus looking to create a place where once or twice or three times, you know, whatever, we check a box because we have a need. And I just need to get this off my plate and then we move on, right? I think probably even in just hearing those descriptions, those just feel so different.
You can tangibly feel the difference between the two descriptions you just gave. I hope our listeners can. I can feel it in the just the way that it is. I think you said good enough sex still comes with certain things, and you identified those. It still comes with safety, trust, being known. And then life happens and logistics get in the way. And so it's not always exactly the way that we would all draw it up or those sex therapists would, but those things seem to be right at the core, because especially that being known part. And that's the part that I think you're coming on today talking about is we still haven't even gotten into it fully yet. Like let's talk about women's sexuality, like how being known, right?
Yeah. Can I just give one quick example before we hop into more feminine sphere? I just want to talk about a client that I worked with recently, a male who just could never feel like satisfied enough with his sexual relationship. It was almost like he was wanting it all the time. Again, and not that that's bad. It's not bad to want sex. Sex is wonderful. It's good to want sex. But for him, it felt very attached to this feeling of anxiety. And even when him and his wife would make love, he would feel kind of like relieved for a little bit. But then very soon after, he'd be wondering, when's the next time it's going to happen, right? And for a long time, he and his wife were really bought into this idea that it was about how frequently they were having sex. Like, they just needed to have it more frequently so that he could feel loved and accepted. Eventually, the therapeutic work got to the point where we realized this wasn't about him having an orgasm. Like, him having an orgasm didn't mean there. Yes, there was a physical release that felt good and it was fun and enjoyable. But what he was really trying to get, like what he really needed to know, was that his wife desired him, that he was a desirable person, that his sexual nature and inclinations and desires mattered, that there was space for that in the relationship. And it really kind of changed the direction of the therapy we did, because no longer were there arguments about how frequently it was happening. It was, okay, how can we speak to that need? Because that is something that really matters. And anyway, I think that story kind of illustrates just how much more sex is about than just ticking a box of, okay, we did it this week and now let's wait until the next time it needs to be addressed. So just another clinical example for you.
I love that, because I think that sex is off, and I don't want to go off here too far, but I think sex in a relationship either turns into a really amazing thing that brings a couple together, or it becomes this destructive thing that really causes problems in a relationship. And so if you're using sex as the band-aid, as the thing that answers all the questions, and I need to consume you in order to feel okay about myself sexually, and then she resents that and hates having sex, but feels obligated. Like, it just starts to create all kinds of issues. And I think your example there, you backed up a little bit and you actually found the actual need with him, and which then led to better connection and probably really good sex, right?
That's the real path to get what everyone is wanting. Yeah.
Right. But if that's the only agenda is to get to the sex, then that's a problem and it doesn't actually meet the need. So I really like that example.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tyler.
I was just going to say, it's like, as you were talking, Bonnie, I was just thinking of all of my friends in the past, even past clients that get on the schedule of like the even and odd days. They have terrible sex lives.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't work that way. You know, and I'll share another story to go along with this really quickly and then kind of lead into some more discussion on this. I was talking to a woman just this last week and she was just saying same thing, same loop. Like he just wants sex. He says he can't do anything because his needs aren't being met. Same cycle. And I said, okay. So, and then she said, if he were to call me, like if I called him right now and said, hey, if you can be home in 15 minutes, we can have anything you want sexually. He would take time off work. He'd be there in 15 minutes. She said, if I called him and said, hey, I really need you to just come home and have lunch with me. Would you just come spend time with lunch with me? He's not going to make time for that. Right. So she's feeling unprioritized. And then I said to her, okay, so what would happen if he actually called you today and said, hey, I really want to see you. I want to take you to lunch. Let's just go have lunch together. She started to melt and she was just like, oh, that would be so awesome. And then she started laughing and she said, and we probably have awesome sex. You know, it's like, yeah, like it's that deeper emotional thing that you're talking about that really does matter, but it never gets talked about because the non-vulnerable thing is frequency, amount of times, whatever else. Mm-hmm. And the focus is on the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which I would also say, like, I think it's easier for men to focus on that because that feels very masculine, right? Like the other day, my husband was walking behind some men and they were having this conversation about, like, how many women did you hook up with this week? And, right, it's masculine to like frequency and right. Cause that proves that I'm desirable and I'm attractive. Right. And I think that that's an easy place for men to feel safe to find validation. Mm-hmm. And I think, and maybe this is kind of a natural segue into, I think the importance of recognizing, honoring, and respecting maybe more naturally feminine gifts to sexuality, which is kind of this acute sensitivity to unfragmented sex, meaning that the foundation of safety and respect and emotional connection and exclusivity is in place before women will choose to engage physically.
I think, you know, if we think about this from like a biological level, like if, you know, if I'm a woman, I need a sperm donor, right? I need sperm. If I want to have babies, I need some sperm, right? So sex and whatever, that's great. That provides that. But if I'm a woman who at times doesn't want sex or doesn't feel attractive, when I'm pregnant, it's like sometimes I just want to push it all away. But I want a man who's still going to stay with me and be with me and care about me and care for me in those moments. And so I both want a sperm donor, but I want a man who's going to connect to my heart and really know me, you know, through those hard times as well, because I need him to help me then. Right. And I want him to be around then. And so it's not just about wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, I need the sperm. It's about so much more than that, yeah. Right?
Yeah. I think there are very few times in a woman's life when she is as vulnerable as she is when she's pregnant and postpartum.
Yeah.
And so the fact that women are very picky sexually makes a whole lot of sense that,
yeah,
right, that a woman isn't going to engage with someone when she feels like it's just about meeting a need for someone else. Like this, there needs to be more there.
Yeah.
And then I think what at least my clients have found is like, once that's there, wow, a woman's sexuality can come out in a way that might overwhelm a man, mm-hmm. right? He might not be able to handle it.
Yeah.
Because that safety is in place to give the woman the freedom to be able to fully express the magnitude of her sexuality, which is amazing.
Oh my gosh, Tyler, I'm going to record what she just said, put it on a loop, and put it in every men's group that I've ever run. because they just, they're like, I want more sex. I want more sex. Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? And what you just said, like,
I got the chills when she said that.
They get it backwards. Right. Mm-hmm.
Totally. Everything you just said was so beautiful. And what my experience is, you know, whether it's been my experience, both I'm currently in recovery from my own kind of pornography addiction. My wife and I have been traveling this journey, and everything you just said has played out to be exactly the way you said it. But then also watching my clients go through this same type of a thing, you're spot on. I guess I just want to give you maybe the floor for a second for people who wouldn't understand this idea of female sexuality. What are some of the things that really need to be spoken, that need to be brought to the forefront, that really need to be talked about in ways that they currently are not talked about in our world?
Yeah. I mean, and this might sound redundant, but I would just say at a foundational level, just because a woman has a different pattern of sexual response doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with her. In fact, right? We're talking about half the population that shares these same patterns, and that's normal. And should be given the same weight and respect as a man's pattern. And, you know, part of this, I think, related very much to a woman's sexuality is just her body and her cycles.
Yeah.
Right. I think culturally, it's very acceptable to roll eyes at a woman's menstrual cycle. Right. There's this kind of joke, oh, she's just PMSing, as if she were in a state that was so off from the norm that she shouldn't be paid attention to. She shouldn't be taken seriously. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, when you take a step back and you look at, okay, well, actually half the world's population is cycling mm-hmm. through these different stages. And each of these stages has like beauty and wisdom to mm-hmm. offer different perspectives. I'm not sure that we'd be so keen on pointing out how it's unreasonable, right? Mm-hmm. I think if we look at the earth, like the earth has cycles. I mean, women really kind of just follow the pattern of the earth, and honoring that instead of seeing that as like this burden or, oh, my wife's just being so unreasonable for, you know, these weeks. But being able to respect that and saying, okay, actually, what gifts is she offering right now? And what wisdom can we both glean from the cyclical nature of her life? I think being able to see that as normal, I think just at a foundational level, right?
Not just normal, but beautiful. And like, when there's no desire there because of her cycle, like that's a time for introspection, for deep wisdom, for spirituality, for growth. And that's beautiful. And to honor that is amazing. And when it's like, nope, time for sex in the middle of something like that is so disrespectful and not honoring that. So I love that, Bonnie.
And, you know, I think that this could even start as early as like when girls start their period. Like, I would say most of the men I've been surrounded by, and boys, with a couple exceptions, a couple happy exceptions, are kind of grossed out by mm-hmm. women's periods. It's like, ugh, you know, and when a girl first gets her period, there's normally often, unfortunately, quite a bit of shame around it. Like, oh, now I have this burden that I have to carry. Mm-hmm. And like, there's all this pain and I have to keep up with the world because the world doesn't slow down for period cramps and, you know, changing, you know, your period products. And I think for a man or for a father to be able to celebrate and honor his daughter, not make fun of it. Like, I think a lot of us use humor because we get uncomfortable. Maybe we don't know how to respond. It's like, you have blood coming out of you. I don't know how to respond to this. But to be able to honor that as something that is essential and beautiful, even starting as young as when women start menstruating, I think, mm-hmm. right, that's how, that feels like it sets an amazing foundation of actually your sexual cycles, your Your normal cycling patterns are good and respectful. This isn't an inconvenience.
Yes.
Right? This, your reality matters just as much as mine. I think just even starting at that foundational level, right? Because what does that look like in marriage, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of a husband saying, oh, dang it. Like, and I know different couples have different sex practices around menstruation. And some couples will still have sex during the bleeding. And some are like, oh, I don't want to get even close to that. Like, don't touch me. Mm-hmm. Right. And I don't think that there's a right or wrong way. It's definitely up to the couple. But how that looks like translated to marriage is, oh, I respect that you're going through something a little bit different right now. And how can I support you? And mm-hmm. I want you to be comfortable, and your comfort matters. Versus, oh man, dang it, I can't get what I want from you right now because right. you're unavailable.
One is done with reverence and honor, and the other one is done with consumption, I think, is what you're describing. And
yeah,
I was thinking of a client I had several years ago. She was telling me about, she had a bunch of sisters, and she said that there was a kind of a tradition in her home that every time her, like when she did, and then when her sisters did systematically, when they actually started having their period, their dad would take them out on a date, and then he'd give them a silver necklace and basically initiate them into their womanhood and help them understand how beautiful it was that they were stepping further into the process of possible creation and everything else. And I just thought, man, like, How different would this be in a relationship if a man understood that that's what was going on rather than the consumption that he's looking to take? Mm-hmm. And how much more open would that relationship become for not only her, but for him in a marriage, right? She's now being seen and treated with reverence and respect and being cherished and chosen. And the natural part of her femininity is then going to want to open up and to give because she feels safe and seen. And man, we get that wrong all the time. So mm-hmm. that's beautiful.
I mean, it just starts at such a young age in our culture where we just start making fun of it, or it's a burden, or, you know, I'm curious, Bonnie. So this is, I'm thinking of my own daughter. I have a 15-year-old daughter. So one thing that you're mentioning is just from the get-go, like honoring who she is as a woman and her cycle. What else, like if you were to teach a, you know, adolescent girl about her sexuality, what else is important to teach?
Mm-hmm.
Let me, before you answer, Bonnie, let me just make, that's a perfect segue, Brandon, into, for anyone, for anyone who's actually interested, there's a much longer version of the answer here with Bonnie. You actually have a book that you've written that I think would address a lot of these things, called Sex Educated, and it's Letters from a Latter-day Saint Therapist to Her Younger Self, which is where you've actually written letters back to your version of a young girl up through the teenage girl, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. Sorry. I just want to throw that in there because I think you've answered.
Hey, thanks.
There's going to be a whole bunch of other answers.
Well, I'll tell you what,
you can give verbally.
I'm ordering that today for my 15-year-old daughter. So.
Yeah. Well, good. Yeah. You know, I've gotten a lot of feedback, not only from women, but from men, fathers of daughters that have said, wow, this, like, I just didn't know, or I didn't mm-hmm. really understand. And they felt a little bit better equipped to relate and teach their daughters. I would say, you know, another really important thing, Brandon, in, you know, response to your question is, women do not thrive sexually or in other areas of their lives when they're treated as an object, right? You guys mm-hmm. have used the word like consuming in the session today. And, you know, actually for some women, to be an object of desire, to know that you can inspire desire in your partner and turn him on, right? That's really exciting. And that's, I think, a really important part of marital sexuality is like that desire. But that's not really what I'm talking about right now.
Right.
Because I think that can be really wonderful and productive within in safety. But so often it doesn't happen in safety. And girls are taught so often at a really young age that their bodies are something that have a lot of power to do evil, or mm-hmm. to inspire evil in another person. And I mean, I'm just thinking of, like, you know, things as simple as telling a little girl to, like, cover up her body, not because it's cold outside or because this is how you respect your body, but because you might make someone else respond to you. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm thinking of, like, dress codes given at girls camp for, you know, 11 and 12 year old girls, you know, and the reason, like, I remember hearing it when I was given my dress code for my girls camp, like, oh, the reason why there's this dress code is because there's going to be men there who, as an aside, might be like my dad's age or older. And you might cause them to be uncomfortable. You know, right. So, like, here's, like, a little 11 or 12 year old girl who's like, oh, an adult man is going to sexualize me. Right? Mm-hmm. That's not what's being said to her explicitly, but she's going to figure it out.
Implicitly, yeah.
Exactly. And I think what that does to a young woman that grows into an adult woman is this relationship with my body that it's not mine, that I am an object of, and I have to use my body to control the people around me so that I'm safe. And right, just as I'm describing that, right, that's not a very integrated relationship with one's mm-hmm. body, right? Mm-hmm. Not belonging to yourself. And women who thrive sexually are women who feel like they belong to themselves, women who feel like they have autonomy, women who aren't afraid of their ability to inspire desire in a person, but also do not feel responsible to control mm-hmm. another person's desire. And again, that's something that can start at such a young age that I think it's really important how we talk about bodies and about modesty, that it's mm-hmm. not about trying to control or prevent evil in the people around you, but it's a way to show respect for yourself and for God and gratitude for your body. Also, that modesty is about what the true meaning of modesty is about, which is, like, not flaunting, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think sometimes maybe in an effort to overcorrect, people want to say, well, modesty shouldn't be about, you know, when we're talking about modesty, there should be no mention or allusion to it meaning covering yourself at all. And I actually disagree with that. I think that just in the same way that I think it's sinful to flaunt things that you have so that you feel superior than them, right? Whether that's, like, I don't know, material things. I also think, you know, if we're trying to use our body to show dominance or, like, superiority to other people, whether that's, like, I'm stronger than you or I'm curvier than you or, like, you know, I think that matters too. That's a topic probably for another day, but I think, yeah, really trying to get at the core of, like, what modesty means, and truly controlling other people around you is not a part of that. And I love, you know, when people feel like, oh, but, you know, have rebuttals to this. I just love to point to the New Testament, where Jesus is not telling women to cover up. He's telling people to, like, poke their eye out. Like, if you're lusting, right? He's not saying, you know, like, don't lust after people, so women cover up. He's saying, don't lust. And if you are, that's on you.
Right.
Because I think I had this really interesting experience. We lived in Spain for a couple of years, and in Spain, people, I think, are a little bit more open about celebrating their bodies, and beaches look a little bit different than they do here. And again, just kind of cultural differences. But I remember this moment where I was pushing my stroller in, like, my frumpy mom clothes, and, you know, no one was really looking at me. But there was this woman who was just, like, so beautiful, like, And her body was just like perfect, and she was wearing clothes that really accentuated it. And I was like, wow, that is like a beautiful woman. She was crossing the street, and I could see all these men like turning and watching her. And then I like looked up at the street, and there was this woman who was Muslim, and so she was completely covered. And so her hair was covered. She was covered, you know, to her wrists and to her ankles. And I had this moment where I was like, okay, these women actually have a lot in common. And even though it's maybe like even hard for me to like verbalize right now, what I feel like they had in common is their dress was in response to men. Like the woman covering was doing so. And this is not, I think that there are a lot of women, I think there's a lot of reasons why women would follow a religious dress code, me being one of them, right? So there's no judgment here. But one reason why I've heard that women will cover is to protect themselves from men.
Right.
And then on the other end of the spectrum, this woman was dressing to attract men, but both were in response to men. And I think it just kind of goes to show, like, sometimes it doesn't matter how much a woman covers up. Like, if a woman is seen as an object, she will be treated as an object, no matter how much skin she's showing.
Yep. That's an interesting story.
That's a really interesting story. And I love the thought that you said about modesty, like taking the judgment about you being beautiful out of it. And it's more about, what am I doing with whatever those things are? If I happen to have a certain level of beauty, am I doing it to be better than? That's actually the issue that's going to disconnect me from people, rather than, oh, there she is, like flaunt, you know, like whatever else. So I really like the way that you kind of pulled that in, and it's something that's going to get my brain chewing for quite a while. I know we're getting a little bit short on time here. A couple of things. One is just, anyone who's interested in kind of following your work more, how do they best find you? And then two, is there anything else that, you know, you've got, our listeners are mostly working recovery from betrayal or some type of an addiction, and as it relates to this kind of population, is there anything else that you would want our listeners to know?
Yeah. So your first question, I try to be active on Instagram. I just get so much fatigue. So I do have an Instagram. It's just Bonnie Young. But more reliably, you could just, I have a website, BonnieYoungCounseling.com. And then my clinic website is azurecounseling.com, but you can connect with me a little bit better on BonnieYoungCounseling.com. There's that. And then things that I would want any, you know, your listeners to know, and this is something that I talk about at length in my book, this is, I think, one of the things I hold most dear to my heart, not only because of my clients' experiences, but because of my own. Is I think that our sexuality, like the persistent, constant nature of our sexuality, is there for a reason. And I think it's because our sexuality can be such an incredible catalyst for growth. Now, whether that's feeling like I'm too sexual, what do I do with this? Right. Or a lack of sexual desire, which, you know, a lot of women I work with struggle with. Sexuality seems to be something that you just can't not think about. It's like, mm-hmm. You can't, you know, if you put it on the back burner, normally it will come back in some way, shape or form in your life, and feel kind of persistent. Like, this is something that needs to be addressed. And I think that's on purpose. And I think that how easy it is to make sexual mistakes is on purpose. And I think it's because our sexuality was meant to help us expand our souls and our capacity for love and compassion and expression. And it makes me really sad how much shame is attached to those sexual mistakes. Not that they don't matter or not that they should be taken seriously, but I think that I just think we can I think if we're utilizing the right sources in our lives, for me, that's been like God and trying to be really attuned to my marriage. Like, it has inspired probably more growth in me than any other source or drive or, you know, entity in my life has. And I think that's, there's something to be said for the beauty in that. And it's, and just the constant nature of it, right? It's like, for most of us, it's not going to be like a one and done. I made this one mistake and now this is no longer a presence in my life. And I think that's on purpose. I think God intended us to use this to become the best versions of ourselves that we can be, which includes a version of ourselves that is forgiving and compassionate, has a soft and open heart, can extend grace to ourselves and to others.
Amen. You know, sexuality is of God, even women's sexuality. So, Bonnie, thank you for coming on today. Really appreciate the work that you're doing. Keep it up. Good luck with your pregnancy.
Thank you.
Hope everything goes good with that, and really, really grateful for what you're doing. So thank you.
Thanks for having me on.